Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Sophia Wilson and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of CP yachting is Charlotte Hogarth-Jones.
Hello, how did it go? I know you're fresh from Explorer Yacht Summit, aren't you?
Yeah, well, I don't know whether fresh, but
you're back from.
I'm back from. It's as always with these things, it's a kind of a huge sense of relief that it's over. All the panelists made it. I didn't fall over on stage, et cetera, et cetera. When we arrived on Wednesday, it was absolutely pouring with rain. But thankfully, woke up the next morning and it was bright sunshine, 20 degrees, and that sort of set the tone for the whole day. We'll be releasing some of the talks as podcasts in the coming weeks, but I can share with you some of the highlights from the day.
Yeah, go on. Talk us through, because I saw lots of stuff on social media, kind of people saying how useful they'd found it, lots of people making new connections and people that you'd have assumed might have known each other. And turns out they haven't. Now they've met there. But who was good to listen to?
So I know we bigged him up a lot beforehand, but Victor Vescovo really didn't disappoint. For those of you who haven't listened to previous podcasts, he basically is a private equity investor who decided he was going to build the world's most advanced sub and then take it to the deepest part of every one of the world's oceans, because why wouldn't you? But he did incredible scientific research along the way, and he spoke so passionately about why it was important that more owners got involved in scientific research while they're on these vessels. And I think what's really interesting about him as well, which I did know because I have known Victor for a number of years, but what he really drilled home was that he hadn't even come from a yachting background. It wasn't like he owned lots of yachts in the past. He just decided to do this amazing adventure with this yacht and obviously found, you know, he found different species. He found parts of the ocean that people didn't even know exists. And, you know, when you think about something like I'm not going to get the stats wrong. I apologize, everyone, but it's whatever it is, 75% of the world is oceans. We've got this huge global climate change, but essentially we don't know anything about the depths of the ocean. And he has single-handedly discovered all this stuff, which really will potentially change climate strategy moving forwards. And I don't think he spoke really well. You know, he wasn't saying every owner had to go out there and do as huge an undertaking as he did, but he spoke really well about some of the smaller things that owners should do. And yeah, he just was incredibly inspiring. I think that was the word that everyone I spoke to afterwards just said. He was so inspiring.
Yeah, fantastic.
And kind of at the other end of the spectrum, another highlight for me was Captain Stephen Edwards, who again is another former podcast interviewee. And he spoke about what he's doing on board Seahawk, which is a 60-metre Perini Navi, which again has owners who are completely new to the industry. And they have bought that yacht with the purpose of travelling and having lots of fun, but they want to do scientific and philanthropic projects wherever they go. So they've already done great projects in the Galapagos, Mexico, French Polynesia. And he spoke really well about that. He kind of jokes that it's a bog-standard Perini Navi, but they've been tagging sharks off the back of it. And then I asked him, I was like, so how do you tag a shark? And he gave a very kind of detailed account of...
How do you? Go on.
You basically have to get them, and I didn't quite get to bother with this, you have to flip them onto their backs and then they go into a catatonic state. And apparently a very, very dopey, and you effectively can perform what is quite a minor operation. But it's pretty amazing as a captain, because he, again, didn't come from a, you know, he hasn't spent all his years as an expedition yacht captain or anything like that. He spent his years as a kind of milk run med captain and has now found himself part of this mission and is clearly loving it. And then closing the day, we had Lord Irvin Laidlaw. He's quite simply just a legend of the sea of yacht industry. He's owned 45 yachts to date.
It's a lot of yachts.
I can't even get my head. And while he was talking, he was like, oh, and then this Heeson, and then I had this and this Fedship. And yeah, I mean, it's just a kind of, he's sort of an encyclopedia. I think if you were thinking about buying a yacht, you should definitely take him out for lunch and get him to talk you through his list of things to do. He had some brilliant anecdotes of the places he'd been, amazing people he'd met along the way, which destinations he rated, which destinations he didn't rate. And it was just a lovely way to end the day with that kind of really, I mean, down to earth is the wrong word because it's not down to earth, but that sort of firsthand experience of someone who's actually had a super yacht and just gone, or many super yachts in his case, and just gone all over the world with them.
And did he talk about his new yacht? Because I know he's got one kind of coming up, hasn't he?
He's recently commissioned a 36-metre Mulder, and he was quite funny about that because it's obviously a big downsize from his current Lady Christine. But I think the idea is to run, he's commissioned the new one so that he also has another one on a global voyage. But he was quite funny about how he was going to deal with the life struggle of only having a 36-metre.
Yeah, I guess. Bit of a step down for some, but fantastic for exploring. That's the right size if you want to get into little sort of tucked away places.
Yeah, well, he doesn't show any signs of stopping exploring yet, so...
Fantastic. Well, it sounds like it was a roaring success.
Well, hopefully, yeah. Any feedback, good or bad, then you can email podcast or email the events team or contact me directly. But no, I think it was. It's such a great sector of the industry. It's a lot of fun to talk about for a day.
Yeah.
It's definitely, yeah, one of the it's my kind of baby in terms of looking after it, but it's, yeah, it's definitely one of my highlights of the year as well.
Fantastic. And then obviously, December issue is shortly to land through everyone's post boxes.
Yeah, so I came back into the office this morning to find a shiny December copy on my desk. I'm potentially a bit biased because I did write the cover bait feature this month, but I do think it looks great. I'm also a sucker for a foil cover.
Yeah, it's a beautiful cover, helped by the fact she's a very beautiful boat. And if you're a Beatles fan, you've noticed there are a few cover lines that have snuck on there, Beatles related, because the cover boat is called...
It's called Come Together. And we really had to hold Stuart back because he completely lost his mind at Beatles cover lines.
It was a bit Beatles mania in the office.
Well, yeah, I think he's been persuaded most of them we got off the cover and into his Ed's letter instead, which is quite a funny read this month if you want to skip to that first. But more importantly, Come Together. She is the new Amel 60. We've spoken about her before because I obviously saw her in Monaco. And she's the first of the limited edition series that's been done in collaboration with Espen Bueno. And she features this stunning winch interior. A couple of highlights from a kind of layout perspective. She's got great access from the guest cabin straight to the beach club, which lots of people that I spoke to about the yacht said that's just what guests are looking for. Mm. They want to be able to get up, go outside and jump straight off the yacht. And actually, if you're at sea, of course you do. Why not? And then another feature that I loved about her, she's got this great sun deck, which has got this huge table. You can just imagine having some pretty raucous dinners up there, but it's protected forward with kind of these glass wind protectors. So actually it's a lot more usable in kind of all conditions rather than, I think sometimes you see these amazing sun decks, but actually how usable they are if you've got some wind, they're quite quickly aren't. And as I mentioned, yeah, the winch interior, it's just all about the detail. I could have spent all day on that yacht because the more you look, the more you notice. Nothing shiny, all kind of natural woods, materials, textures. Anyway, hopefully my feature does it justice and the art team, as usual, have done an incredible job at really showcasing the yacht in terms of the imagery that we've used. So that's a good read, hopefully. And also I think we've both spoken about before, but my feature that I wrote on Nabila and her owner Khashoggi and basically how that yacht shaped the superyacht industries in there. The thing I love about that piece is some really lovely memories in it. So Dickie Bannenberg speaking about being at her launch party, her former deckhand spoke to me about how he ended up on board. And then of course, Burgess's Geoff Beckett also talked me through how he ended up selling the yacht, of course, to Donald Trump years later.
Didn't Dickie say he ended up wearing his school blazer or something? There was some rather sweet story there.
He wore his school rowing blazer, which I think was bright pink. Because those rowing blazers are quite gaudy. And I think, yeah, I think his father said that that's what he thought he'd fit in best with. And I think probably was right. I mean, it was quite the party by all accounts.
Yeah, no, that's a great piece. And it's interesting to hearing lots of people saying that they'd enjoyed working for him as well. Some of the people you'd interviewed, I think, said that they had found him to be, you know, to all intents and purposes, a good boss, a good owner. So it's always interesting to get to know the kind of person behind the name.
I think it's... Yeah, I mean, it's one of these things, isn't it? It's very hard to kind of differentiate the personality from obviously some of the things that he was potentially involved with. Dickie said to me, apparently, I don't think I managed to work this into the feature, but apparently he always used to send a Christmas card at Christmas saying something like peace and love on earth. They always used to find hilarious in the office. But anyway, what were some of your other highlights of the December issue?
Other things in December issue, do check out the private aviation special. I know that so many more owners are flying privately these days, be it on their own jet or sort of increasingly just the odd flight via an app or a part ownership scheme or something like that. We do this every year and it's a really comprehensive guide to everything you need to know about that's going on in the aviation world right now. So this issue, there's a big piece on eVTOLs, which are electric vertical takeoff vehicles, which look awesome. They are so cool design-wise. And obviously, they're not as fuel hungry as your usual private jets. So it's worth learning about those if you're thinking about, you know, making a purchase, really. And there's also a long read all about all the different companies that allow you to book, you know, just book and fly a bit like Uber on these apps or these websites. they've come quite a long way in the past, even the past year or so. Fluber is one. I absolutely love the name, obviously, like Uber for flying. But this is a fantastic, a really knowledgeable guide to differentiating between them, actually booking a flight that way, which one might work for you. So keep an eye out for that. Also, if you're a kind of dedicated podcast listener, you might remember that we interviewed Britain's wealthiest gypsy, Alfie Best, a while ago about his yacht, Wildcrest. So if you didn't catch the podcast, you can obviously look it up. We can link it below. But the interview is also in print in this issue, so you can actually have a look at what his beautiful boat looks like and hear why it's already gone down a total storm on the charter market, despite being only recently launched. So yeah, loads of great stuff in December. And meanwhile, we're working away on features for next year with some great pieces coming out. January, of course, is when we release our big top 101 list, which is the updated index of the 101 biggest boats in the world, which is always hotly anticipated. Some really major new entries this year, most of which I don't think we can disclose quite yet, but all very interesting new vessels with some very interesting new owners too. So as soon as we can talk about that on here, we will, and we'll give you a bit of a preview maybe in a couple of weeks once it's gone to print. I'm also working on a really interesting piece right now about the changing shape of the Superyacht Spa. So if you're listening to this and you're an owner or a designer who's planning a really amazing one, do quickly drop me a line and let me know all about it. podcast@boatinternationalmedia.com. And yeah, we last ran something about spas about 4+ years ago, which is when owners were just starting to move from basically a kind of sauna hidden away somewhere to something a bit bigger and a bit more exciting. So we thought, well, let's look and see what the latest is. And actually, things have developed hugely since then, maybe more than I think I had realised anyway. So I spent last week chatting with designers around the world about what their upcoming projects are looking like and things that are going to be coming out over the next few years. And one of the things that came up is that a big kind of like health club is a bit of a thing where you've got a gym, a spa, maybe a beach club, a hairdresser, makeup salon, but, you know, quite a big one, or a couple of treatment rooms, and even a kind of residential lounge type area where people can kind of chill out between treatments and chat and relax. That's becoming much more of a thing. So it's just like you get a proper spa on land. And partly this is kind of charter owners or guests going away for longer periods that want to have, you know, they see it as an extra thing to do so they can invite their guests on spa days and make it much more of a kind of social activity. So that was really interesting, I thought. And of course, most boats don't have the luxury of having the space to have all of that, or at least certainly not all of them on the same deck. But some of them do. And that seems to be something that the really big boats are going into. And I've even heard kind of stories of, there was one concept I was discussing with someone where the kind of main salon of the yacht was actually kind of like a spa reception area, which sounds kind of nuts. Yeah. But the more I thought about it, especially for a charter boat, the more it kind of makes sense, because I think there's this kind of outdated idea that super yachts are champagne and excess and partying, which of course that's part of it. But for a lot of people, it's a break, it's a time to chill out. It's a kind of wellness break, really. And of course, what happens when you walk on a yacht? You get a nice cold towel, you get a nice, you know, healthy drink, you want to sit down and relax somewhere. And so actually having this kind of lounge reception-y area makes a lot of sense for a lot of people. And of course, gym kit is kind of a different breed to what it once was. It isn't the sort of ugly, hulking, grey, plasticky stuff. One designer kind of made the point that if you are really big into your fitness, then some of the sort of super high tech stuff is actually quite elegant and quite sculptural. So it's not awful to have a glass of wine in front of it. It can be quite a kind of design statement in that way. And everyone, and this is not sponsored or plugged by Technogym, I'm getting nothing from this, but everyone mentioned the Technogym Kinesis as a particularly beautiful bit of kit. I looked it up, and I'm speaking to them to get more details about it, but essentially it's a kind of wall with cables and pulleys and things that you can pull out to do your weight training. You can use it, and I think it says there's sort of 250 different workouts you can do with it. But designers love it because it's very cool looking, it's very sleek, it doesn't clutter up the space, and you can choose whether you want kind of mirror or different woods, and they can make it custom to kind of fit your yachts.
I have to look this up.
Yeah.
I can't quite picture what you mean. That's no disrespect. Yeah, I'm trying to explain it.
It's a wall with cables, a bit like if you were doing a kind of TRX and you were pulling something and leaning back. It's like that, but the cables, basically the weights are behind the wall. So you're pulling, you know, like if you're on a normal weights machine in the gym, you just can't see that bit. You can only see the cables.
Because they have had things like that in the past. I remember many years ago going on a yacht and there was one of those in the bedroom and it was a bit unclear as to...
Yes, maybe best not to ask too many questions, but
this sounds entirely different.
It seems like they basically all said this and freeze and some sort of very beautiful free weights. That's the kind of trend at the moment.
Right.
No one's, maybe you'll get a treadmill, but no one's really, you know, you're not getting cross trainers and all these kind of freestanding bits and pieces. But something did make me laugh as well, and that they were talking about, you know, I was hearing about all these examples of insane gyms and insane spas, and lots of people mentioned that even on these yachts with these, you know, beautiful, impressive gyms, you know, like something you'd get on land, the owner still wants a kind of separate bit near their cabin where they can have a few weights and kind of work out away from the crowd. And I thought, yeah, it's funny. So people are inviting more and more people on board their boats, and it seems like they're people that they don't know as well, you know, their colleagues or their more acquaintances than friends. And for all these kind of beautiful exposed spaces on deck, all these kind of glass palaces, they still want their privacy. Remind me of that old saying, train like a beast, look like a beauty. So I guess the owners aren't that keen on doing their workouts in front of everyone and anyone who comes on board. And that's fair enough. I'm not sure how I'd feel about pumping on in front of the whole of Boat International.
Yeah, I had the gym to myself in Monaco both mornings. In Flibs, there were a few more crossovers.
A few more near misses.
Harry from our commercial team is very much shredding for the wedding, which is in a few weeks' time. So, I think best just to ignore all colleagues at that point is my gym mentality when on work trips.
Absolutely. Well, you're off again shortly, aren't you?
I am tomorrow morning back to Heathrow. I'm going to Amsterdam. Obviously, Metz is on this week, so a lot of the team are out there. And we've got the Boat Builder Awards tomorrow night, which are, of course, hosted by our sister publication, IBI. But the main reason why I'm heading out is to be moderating a special roundtable on gender and diversity issues in the superyacht industry. So earlier this year, alongside the superyacht recruiter, Boat launched the first ever People and Skills Survey. And the findings were probably not surprising, but they were pretty stark. So more than 450 people answered the survey, of which of the participants, 72% were male and 90.53% were white. However, I think the positive to take for this is that when they were then questioned about the one way they'd like to see the industry change, more than 40% said that gender and diversity needed to be the biggest way that the industry could improve. So in order to keep up momentum and continue from that, we've invited 12 participants from across the industry, so design, builders, as many different aspects as we can get them from, to basically have a conversation behind closed doors and try and discuss some of those key questions. So some that I've got on my list are, what are the risks to the superyacht industry if these issues are not addressed? What can be done to improve diversity within the industry? And how can individuals and corporations take greater responsibility for achieving this? And is the superyacht industry casting the net wide enough for recruitment? Should there be more effort to bring in fresh talent from different backgrounds and industries? We'll obviously be following up afterwards with what came out of the discussion. It's not the lightest topic to have over breakfast, but I'm hoping that we can start to move the needle. And I think it is a worthwhile discussion. And if we don't talk about it, then nothing's going to change.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm really looking forward to hearing what comes out of that. It's one of those things where it's quite easy to sort of state the obvious. And like you say, it's not that easy to come up with what should be done to change things and come up with sort of tangible actions for people to take back to their businesses and start moving forwards with. But it is, you know, it's an increasingly big problem. I mean, when the pandemic hit, all of these Australian and Kiwi staff that had been working on the boats went home, and people in Europe found there was a real lack of qualified staff here and elsewhere in the world. And, you know, whose fault is that? It's hard to say, and it's not particularly useful to say. I think lots of people are doing their best now to change that. But one thing which is quite obvious when you speak to especially the guys from New Zealand, it's so obvious that they've kind of grown up on the water and they've done sailing at school and they've been very aware of yachting as a career from a very young age. Whereas, you know, I don't know about you, it was never something I would have thought about at school or considered an option in any way. It just wasn't something we were aware of. And I'm sure that's the case for, you know, the vast majority of people.
Yeah. So, I mean, interesting. So the the skills survey was very much land-based rather than crew-based, because we obviously do a crew-based survey through DotWalk. So it is looking at it much more from the shore side industry. And obviously a lot of people do come into that from crew. So it's all relevant and all feeds into each other. But no, I equally had no idea really that the yachting industry existed. And if I had, I probably would have gone and been crew for a few years, because why not? It's a great way to see the world. I mean, it has its issues as well, as I'm sure any listening crew members will tell you, but I think there's a lot of people that don't even know it exists.
Absolutely. And it's across the board as well. You know, in the design world, I was speaking to Catherine Pooley the other day as part of that feature I'd written on the custom line. And she was talking about kind of all the hoops she'd recently been jumping through in order to get different designers from different countries to join her studio. And it had been a lot of admin, a lot of kind of hanging around the home office here in London. And it doesn't exactly encourage designers of smaller studios who are pushed for time to, you know, to dedicate the time to doing stuff like that. So, you know, the red tape around that needs to change as well. But anyway, looking forward to seeing what people who are much more knowledgeable have to say. And you'll, let us know.
Yeah, I'll feed back. And yeah, as I say, hopefully a positive thing. It's not designed to be. I'm hoping it's going to be positive. Not, we can all talk about ways the industry has failings. I think it's more important about the way we talk, how the industry moves forwards with the next generation.
Absolutely. Well, shall we crack on with some news?
Absolutely. So first up, we have that the 74-metre AMELS Project 24207 has been handed over to her owner and christened M&M. She marks the seventh launch from the Yard's Limited Edition series, Limited Editions 242 series, that is, of course, and joined sister ships Avanti and New Secret as she departed from Darman Yachting Shipyard. Her royal blue hull and ice white superstructure have been designed by Tim Hayward with interior styling by Winch Design. The yacht has an interior volume of 1,790 GT and can accommodate up to 12 guests and 19 crew. The full configuration of the cabins is yet to be revealed, but we do know that she features a dedicated forward-facing owner's deck, complete with a hot tub and large swimming pool, maybe even a sneaky private gym there too. Not sure about that. And project manager Peter Drinkwell said that AMELS was delighted to be handing over this beautiful yacht to her owners, calling it a milestone which has been made possible thanks to the excellent collaboration between all parties involved. The eighth limited editions 242 hull was sold in December 2021 and is scheduled for delivery next year.
I look forward to seeing that. Well, next up is the news that the Italian Sea Group has confirmed a 64.6% increase in revenue in the first three quarters of the year. The report pointed to strong and constant growth across its two divisions, shipbuilding and refit. The group's shipbuilding division generated 185.7 million euros in the first three quarters of the year, a 67.7% increase on 2021's figures, driven by the progress of existing motor yacht and sailing yacht projects, the sale of two Admiral Panorama 50 motor yachts in the third quarter, and the ever-popular Technomar for Lamborghini 63. Meanwhile, its refit division contributed a smaller 26.6 million euros, but represents a larger overall increase of 176% on 2021's figures. This is as a result of an uptick in refit activities on yachts over 60 metres in length, and a considerable increase in production capacity at the Via Reggio and La Spezia shipyards. In light of the third quarter results, the Italian Sea Group forecasts total revenues between 280 and 295 million euros at the end of 2022.
It's very, wow. Yeah. It's very impressive. And sticking with Italy and sticking with financial figures, San Lorenzo has also revealed its financial results for the third year, reporting a 248.5 million euros in new orders, driving a record-breaking order book totaling 1.7 billion euros. The financial report indicated double-digit revenue growth for the Italian shipyard in each of the first three quarters of the year, owed to the expansion of its portfolio with several new models launched ahead of the 2022 boat show season. The consolidated net revenues of new yacht sales across the first 9 months of the year totaled 544.1 million, which represents a 27% increase on the 2021 figures. San Lorenzo's yacht division, which comprises of composite models between 24 and 36 metres, was the biggest contributor, with 353.6 million euros in net revenue secured, up 34.3% on the previous years. Massimo Perotti, chairman and CEO of San Lorenzo, attributed the growth in the segment to the success success of the shipyard's SL and SD lines and the introduction of the SP series at this year's Cannes Yachting Festival. He also noted a steady increase in the operating margins as a result of a more general shift in favour of larger yachts across each business unit.
Well, some incredible figures there, and it'll be interesting to see what the final quarter of the year brings. So that's it for the news. I thought I'd finish the news with a bit of a rumour I heard, but it seems to be, you know, I've heard it from numerous sources, namely via Medair, the big company that supply yachts with all their medical kit and things like that. And apparently dengue fever is on the up around the world. In fact, they reckon there's been a 92% increase in dengue-related cases compared to last year, which I thought was phenomenal, 92% increase. That was quite a staggering statistic. Anyway, I just thought it was worth mentioning because if you're heading to the Caribbean or an area where this is a known issue, I know that all the captains are talking to each other, but it's a good reminder to make sure you take the proper precautions while you're out there. Dengue, obviously, like most illnesses, it's a kind of spectrum of disease. It can be very mild, while some people can experience strong headaches, high fevers and a rash. And in really severe cases, it can progress to bleeding and organ failure. So scary stuff to think about.
Well, one of my colleagues at Boat, she doesn't work anymore. She got it when she went on a trip to the Maldives years ago and was very ill, was in hospital. And I think it's called something horrible, like they nickname it the bone-breaking flu or something, because that's what it feels like. So, best avoided. It's mosquitoes, I believe. So
yeah, like I'm not sure things, why that's
avoid.
Kind of...
Avoid getting bitten.
Yeah, why it's on the up, but I'm going to look into it a bit further.
Yeah, I think it's stagnant water as well. That feeds it. But I'm saying this with absolutely no medical background, so please Google for yourselves.
Okay.
But best avoided from what I've seen is all I can say.
Absolutely. So that's a horrible warning. And now, more upbeat, onto the data. So this week we've gone Dutch, as ever. Our data is brought to you by our market intelligence platform, Boat Pro. And given its Mets, we thought now was a good time to cast a closer eye over our friends in Holland. And we thought we'd start by giving a quick overview of the Dutch production over 24 metres and looking at the fleet. So the Dutch fleet is made up of 973 yachts. They've got a total LOA of 41,749 and an average LOA of 42.9 metres. Looking at gross tonnage, the fleet has a total gross tonnage of 497,598, and the boats have an average gross tonnage of 511. Then if we look at the split between motor and sail, the fleet's made up of 744 motor yachts and 229 sailing yachts. And an interesting split between semi-custom and fully custom, there are 336 semi-custom boats and 637 full custom boats. And they all have an average age of 26 years old. So those 973 yachts, they represent nearly 8% of the global fleet over 24 metres. It's interesting to see that the Netherlands is also one of the rare countries which has produced more full custom projects, there's 65.5% of them, than semi-custom ones at 34.5%. And Dutch yachts are large as well. They've got an average LOA of 43 metres and an average gross tonnage just exceeding 500. And the Dutch fleet currently has six yachts exceeding 100 metres, the flagship being the 117-metre Ocean Co Infinity. So if we break the size categories down in a bit more detail, 24 to 30 metres, there are 280. 30 to 40 metres, there are 218. 40 to 50 metres, there are 210. 50 to 70 metres, still 191. And 70 metres plus, 74. So lots of big boats going on there. When it comes to the global order books, that's what people are working on right now. That's going to be available very soon, so we can't leak the latest results just yet. But what we can tell you is that the Netherlands has maintained its second place by countries, and their projects are larger than they were before. And we can also look back on the results of last year. So last year, Netherlands had 75 projects ordered or under construction with an average LOA of 62.4 metres, so larger than that this year. And there are some giant ones amongst these projects too. Ocean Co currently has five projects exceeding 100 metres and FEDGIP should have four, according to our sources, and AMLS have one.
Wow. Busy time in Holland. I look forward to getting all the goss while I'm out there this week.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, an incredible fleet and interesting to see that they're both doing very big boats and custom yachts, which is interesting. Makes for some exciting projects, that's for sure.
Yeah, have you looked at Italy? I'd have to go back. I'm sure we've done this before, but Italy must be at least flip that the other way in terms of versus semi-custom.
Well, I remember when I first started out working in this industry, I asked someone, oh, who makes the best boats then? And they said, well, Italians make the most beautiful boats and the Dutch make the best built boats. So I'm always interested to see if owners agree with that. Obviously, let us know if you feel strongly one way or the other. So that's it for this week. Thanks for listening to Boat Briefing, which is mixed and produced by Grace Nielsen and is a production of Boat International Media. Of course, don't forget to like and subscribe if you never want to miss an episode. That's it for now, and we'll see you next week.
Bye, everyone.